The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained here in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 22nd, 2014. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And today, we've got Bud Jeffries back. Bud is on the show every other week now. We're going to talk today, we might hit two subjects, but our first main subject is we're going to talk about building those big doorway wide shoulders. As a friend of mine used to say when we were younger kids, this guy was an older guy we used to train with at the Y, he used to say you want to build those big coconuts. So that's a pretty cool thing I want to get into. Bud, I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, and you know, if anybody isn't aware of you, which I don't see how they're not, why don't you give everybody just a brief synopsis on yourself, what you're doing, and what you're looking at, say, in the next 6 months, if you got that far planned.
Yes, sir. All right. So I am a professional strongman, but I'm a professional strongman in the old-time sense. So I do a lot of live shows, that kind of thing. And I like to define myself, if you have to ask me that question, I like to define myself as a strongman in that old-time sense because I believe it carries the widest possible definition of strength. So I've done everything there is to do heavy, powerlifting, strongman competition, Highland Games, wrestling, kettlebell lifting, odd objects, whatever, doesn't matter. I've done everything there is to do lifting-wise in that particular vein and settled on the fact that I just want to be awesome at absolutely everything I can be, brutally strong as well as incredibly healthy and enduring and live a long time. And then I want to so the next 6 months, okay. We have a book that's going to be shipping this next coming week called Maximum Functional Mass, which is about building huge muscles, large muscles, but large muscles that actually have the horsepower to back them up. They're stronger than they look, as well as fast, athletic, coordinated, usable, enduring, healthy, and other things that I think truly makes a human being and a man functional. Mm-hmm. And then we've got another this actually it has two DVDs that will already go with it, but we have a third one in the works where I do more of the live training, show you all the nuts and bolts and exactly why and how I do all the things, as well as actually do it myself. And I'm kind of a stickler for that. I don't like to talk about training that I don't do.
Right.
And then also our next coming project after that is going to be on how to be awesome after 40, how to crushing age. And because I just turned 41 this year, and I've gotten literally some of the greatest physical gains of strength in my life at the age and right around the age, and then also after the age of 40, been able to do stuff I never even thought was humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's the next book. That will be out within another month or so after. Hopefully that won't be out right before Christmas.
One question, I mean, before we get into this, because I've been hearing this from other people that have been on the show. Do you think it's the tendency now that you've learned so much in, say, the last 25 years of training that you've finally figured out what works for you, number one? And number two, do you think it's just like the maturity of training all these years that – suddenly now you're doing things you never envisioned you doing? I mean, let's face it. Most, if you listen to the experts out there, at 40, you're literally dead now, pretty much. and not getting off track, but it's very interesting that you're putting this subject matter out, and it's definitely going to help a lot of people, I'm sure. But what do you think it is, Bud? I mean, obviously, you know, you go in with a kick-ass attitude anyways, but what do you think has changed in you? Why you can still do the same things better, or now you've progressed to a different whole strength, you know, avenue there. What do you think it is?
I think it's a combination of things, Eric. I think I think if you look at the subject from an overall perspective of why, you know, why you're able to do this, what's the deal, I obviously think attitude is a big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly think most people shut themselves down at every age. And the whole reason – the entire reason I got – I wasn't even going to do this subject. But I got so fed up with people who are younger than me, like turning 30, talking about how old they are. And I'm like, dude, you know, whatever, you know, if the world comes to an end, we're all going to die because you're all a bunch of sissies. It's not.
Yep.
I mean, if I got to rely on the, you know, pulling the average 30-year-old guy out and saying, oh my God, are you still manly and viable enough for that we can, you know, survive the human race? Well, I'm a little worried. Yep. And so, honestly, God, I think so much of that is attitude and what you allow in and out of your mind in that way, making decisions about that. One of the most profound things that changed my attitude on that was a friend of mine suggested to me, you know, how old would you literally believe you are? How would you know how to act if you did not actually know your age? If you were somehow able to forget the year of your birth and you had no idea what it was, how would you know that it's suddenly middle age or old age or it's exactly what you said. Most people hear that number of 40 and then they fall apart because they mentally make it happen.
Yeah. Well, you know what else too, Bud? It's I'm not a big believer in chronological age.
No.
Because how many people have you met that will tell you I'm 33 years old and they look like they're about 53 years old, and then you'll see somebody that's 50 and they look like they're maybe 30.
Yep.
Okay? So I've never been a big believer in that anyways, and I could care less about birthdays at this point anyhow, because it's like I'm in for the living. I'm not in for the number. You know, I mean, I have longevity in my family. My grandmother lived to 107 years old.
Wow.
She was pretty viable till like the last 6 months. She didn't lose it mentally. She couldn't do anything physically anymore, bedridden. But
right.
I think that's real important. And another thing, and I'm going to make this quick because I really want to get into the shoulder stuff, but it's important with what you're putting out. I just see a lot of importance in it, is this. I've been hearing a lot lately, and I know different people that have either verbalized it to me or I've read it, and I know them. And I'm kind of surprised in some ways where I got into this with Steve Helmicky today when we were talking about Sistema and weightlifting and all that. We brought it all in about the whole subject of that martial art. And it's very disturbing to me to see people always going out. And we're talking physical athletes. I don't know what level they are, whatever, but these aren't just like, you know, people that are on a treadmill watching TV or they've got to have their stupid-ass Wi-Fi. They're saying now that they're listening, and you hear I hear the verbiage. It's like, all I want to do is keep changing. They're never – it's always got to be this constant, I'm growing, I'm this, I'm that. And I'm sitting here saying, how about shutting all that crap off, learn to be quiet, and listen to your innate intelligence within your body. Now, if I don't know how to do something weightlifting and I contact Bud Jeffries and I say, Bud, I need help. Could I either meet you somewhere or pay you to come here, or can you coach me online? That's one thing. But after Bud Jeffries turns that over to Eric, he's got to kind of make his own way. He's got to find out that maybe what Bud does, I have to change a little bit to have the same success as Bud does. And it disturbs the hell out of me that all they want to do, like, it's this, oh, if you're a type A personality, you can't have a relationship with this girl. Or if you're this, you can't do that. And I just want to get your feeling on that, because I think it all kind of connects to this 40, you know, age of 40, old or whatever. What do you think about stuff like that where we're all, you know, not all of us, but we feel the outer, we always got to reinvent our outer, and we don't listen to the inner.
Well, that's a huge thing. I think that's totally applicable. I actually think a lot of that ties directly into why I'm able to do, or why I kind of hit this period of incredible growth as far as strength and stuff, is because I believe I began to connect my conscious intellect with my body's thoughts, with the subconscious thoughts. And I actually rarely even train by a particular plan anymore. I just know what I need. I just feel what I need to do. Now, that comes after years of being disciplined and knowing exactly how the body should feel and paying attention to it. But there's the thing, having your own thoughts on a subject is a whole. You know what I think it is? I'll be honest with you. This is a weird thing. I think we have to teach children discipline. Mm-hmm. I think many of us as children are taught discipline in a way that doesn't question. Mm-hmm. And so we're taught that anybody who says something with a loud, authoritative voice or writes a book or comes across from us in electronic media should never be questioned. And so what mm-hmm. we end up with is a total bombardment of never thinking yeah. for yourself, never listening yep. to yourself, never listening to your whole what you know describe as an innate intelligence. And I actually believe mm-hmm. your physical intelligence grows, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Totally. I got you.
I'll tell you yep. where I believe that, and I think you can definitely track it. You can watch a guy who just started training, and he'll have a bunch of trouble learning a movement, versus watch yep. a guy who's been training for 10 or 15 years, and he'll pick a movement up relatively. Most of the time, he'll pick it up a lot quicker. I watch wrestlers do this, guys who are starting, and they'd had a lot of trouble drilling a move, picking up a move, and I watched a guy who'd been wrestling for 20 years learn from a different martial artist on a different kind of movement pattern, and mm-hmm. pick it up almost immediately. Your ability to absorb things grows within whatever framework you put it, within the framework of the body, within the framework of the mind, within the framework of thinking for yourself and having your own belief system that you decipher things through, or whether yep. or not you're just blown by the wind of everything and you don't have a, you know, the ability.
An opinion.
It really is tough, because I actually was I noticed this on, you know, I scrolled through my Facebook feed and seeing people talk or whatever. It shocks me how many totally fake websites there are that, like, the Ebola thing that's going on, right?
Yeah.
I literally yeah. scrolled through, and, like, in one day, I think I saw 10 or 15 different ones that were totally fake, that were yep. that come across written exactly like a real news site that said, 25 kindergartners in Texas get Ebola. And,
correct.
And, you know, you're like, we are so inundated with so much information without action behind it or without any truth behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You really got to sift through and think for yourself and go beyond, you know, and like I try to tell people this. I said, I'm a terrible salesman for what I do, because right. a great salesman for what I do wouldn't care about the truth of the thing. And what I would tell you is do it my way and shut up about it and don't question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what people want to be told. That the truth,
I know.
People who sell the most stuff in fitness tell people, do it this way, don't do any different. And I know the best way. But I don't tell you that, because what I tell you, I even tell you that when you listen to my products or when I buy stuff, hey, listen, I'm going to give you my opinion as to why. I'm going to tell you why to do it this particular way. But you have to be a little bit of intelligence for yourself, because the truth is, I can't make it the best for you unless your personal feedback is strong.
Correct.
In other words, if I tell you to squat with this stance and it absolutely does not fit your body,
yep.
you have to make some decisions. Okay, well, hold on. I need to make this minor change. I need to move my hands in 2 inches, or I need to move my feet out 1 inch or 2 inch. I need to turn my feet a little bit. You know, there's differences in being a balance of everything. Doing it yeah. one way versus making it a personalized thing, and sifting through the reality of what you listen to for yourself, what mm-hmm. for you. And the thing, you know, I think a lot of the problem is we're taught that you can never be your own authority.
I agree, totally. And I'll tell you another thing, what I think with all this garbage. I think all this changing and stuff, I think if you're not careful, you can wreck yourself permanently. And I'm not talking just from a weightlifting standpoint. You can destroy any relationship you've had with anybody, because when you're constantly second-guessing everything you do, or, well, this person I don't think really fits – what I really want, or, you know, it's all, and it could also be someone that just can't engage with people or can't build a relationship. You know, they'll always use this stuff like, oh, something happened in a prior time and I'm not the same. I mean, that's a bunch of crap, man. And it's like, it's the same way with the training, you know, it's like, well, I didn't do well with this, so I've got this program, and you know what will happen? It'll work maybe for, let's say, 30 days, and they're right back on the same hump again.
Right.
Right. Well, now that we got that off, let's start talking about big, massive shoulders. Let's start off with the first thing. Do you have anybody, as far as the old-timers, or anybody that were impressive you felt shoulder-wise?
Oh, lots of the guys. When you really look at them, many, many of the old time, and depending on, you know, I kind of separate old time into two different you know, sort of the modern classic bodybuilding era, which is from probably Paul Anderson forward up to about 70 or so.
Yeah.
And then pre-Anderson in the real old-time strongman era. Hackenschmidt, I always thought Hackenschmidt had some pretty awesome shoulders. Wide appearance in the upper body. Obviously, you know, I'm a big Paul Anderson fan who obviously had monster shoulders and monster pressing ability. Hepburn had monster shoulders. You know, Marvin Eater, monster strong. You know, shoulders, those guys were, a lot of the guys were at the, in the real old time guys weren't necessarily overly huge, but they had that very, very rugged look, especially. And I think a lot of that era, I actually think because there wasn't much bench pressing, everything else was more shoulder centric. Versus, you know, versus, I forget who, I think Pavel Sotsalane talked about this some or whatever, where, the modern look to a bodybuilder is very pec heavy. Versus the old time look was very shoulder dominant with some pectoral development, but not the same emphasis on it. And obviously the change there probably is the bench press. You know,
definitely.
That's a big thing. Although those, you know, some, depending on who you're talking about, guys from that era had big chest. Hackenschmidt being another thing too. They had a big wide chest as well. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But I actually personally have gone to the more the old-time way of doing things. I want a heavier shoulder development with still a pec development, but I don't really – I just don't care to do a lot of heavy bench presses anymore. I don't – you know, I work in it. I do a lot more push-up type stuff as that kind of more horizontal pushing development.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. A few of the people I always liked – I mean, obviously, who wouldn't pull Paul Anderson or, you know – Doug Hepburn, but I'll tell you some people that I really thought were, power. I always liked Anthony DiTillo. He was just massive, man. I mean, all over, but he had a big shoulder girdle. Obviously, Marvin Eater, I mean, if anybody knows anything about him, I mean, his claim to fame, like, you talk about shoulder development, who could out-dip a guy? I don't think he tipped the scales at over 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if he didn't get in all that crap with Weider back in the day, you know, he could have been a hell of an Olympic lifter. I mean, that guy could put massive iron over his head. But the guy I always thought that, and if you know, he was kind of a recluse. But do you remember Chuck Ahrens?
I was actually going to mention.
Brutal, man, brutal. I mean, you look at the stuff they said that he was pressing. I mean, I'm a big fan of dumbbells anyways. Holy God. And if you want to talk about a bodybuilder, I always thought that had cannonball shoulders was Don Holworth. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
He was brutal, man. I mean, there's so many of them out there. But if you know, that aside, I mean, with some of the people out there that had those big, huge monster delts, I mean, we're going to set a delt program up. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be a dumbbell press. I mean, overhead, obviously. But I always felt that the dip, when done properly, could build a shoulder girdle like nothing else. What do you think?
I'm actually an overhead press guy, and actually very much Karin's was. But I do agree with you, because the dip is really versatile dependent on how you angle the body.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how you grip, how you angle the body, how you can really sort of focus it between chest or chest triceps or shoulder as well. I mean, every one of those is a great exercise. Every one of those is there's, you know, with the exception of if you're doing them really recklessly or if it's something that, you know, hurts you or whatever. And like, I'll tell you who was a big dipper who also had huge shoulders, but this might be a slightly cautionary tale in regards to this. But it's not the dip. I think it's the training pattern that he uses, Pat Casey.
Oh man, that dude was awesome, dude. I got that picture of him from Milo.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was pressing a pair of 200-pound dumbbells in the incline.
Yeah.
That guy was sick, man. He was awesome. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to go on.
No. The only thing I'll say is that Casey had a pretty intelligent as well as well thought, well laid out. Obviously, you know, first guy to bench press 600 pounds, you know,
sure.
Monster.
Yep.
However, he talks about a friend of mine asked him, you know, one time, because later on he had a lot of trouble with his shoulders and problems and stuff. And I don't know if you ever read that, but, you know, he did some stuff where he did this huge marathon dip.
Okay.
Like 50 or 100 sets, some craziness would go on for like 3-4 hours.
Wow.
Of weighted dips at certain times. And I think he said, I think I went too far.
Yeah.
That's too much of a good thing.
Absolutely. But they were in with some pretty cool people. You remember he was with Peanuts West and all those guys, man? That shit was pretty cool stuff.
Somebody else who we didn't neglected to mention there who had some monster shoulders is Don Reinout.
Absolutely.
Don Reinout
definitely.
Some monster shoulders and monster overhead press, especially from a guy who was really more focused on the bench press but did more like double dumbbell pressing and that kind of thing. He was a monster.
I'll ask you this, and I know what you're going to tell me, but I'm going to ask you anyways. If you had a choice, and I'm talking, you know, you're doing the bench press correctly the way it used to be done, no arching, you're flat on your back, you know, you bring it down to your chest, you'll get the clap and you press it, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're able to take a big monster weight clean and press it, or press it off a set of squat stands. Give me your answer. Which would you take?
Oh, I'd take the big press.
Well, I figured that, but I got to ask anyways, because you could just outsmart me and tell me I want to be a bench press. So yeah, look, here's the bottom line. There's nothing wrong with the bench press, I feel, when it's executed properly, because I do believe I would call it more of a floor press, because if I do them, which is rare, I'll lay it, you know, I'm in my power rack, I'm laying on my platform, and I'm starting it dead off the pins. I don't use a bench at all.
Right.
I feel that's the way to do it. That's just my my priorities there, my selection. Now, as far as the dips go, I have two sets. I did this because I learned the hard way with them. You know, most gyms you would go to, you would strap the, you know, you'd strap the weight around your waist, and you'd always have to hop up on something and then get yourself up on the bars,
right,
which I always thought, number one, was very dangerous. If you ever had any slippage, you know, you got a torn pec, a shoulder, whatever.
Right.
Well, what we did here is we took them, and they're very low. We took 4x4 wood and lagged it right into the garage cement wall. So when you got a big chunk of iron either around your neck or in around your waist or both, the ability where you don't have to hop up real high saves your, in my opinion, a serious injury. And then we have another set outside of my garage where I've got 6x6s right across the length of the garage, buried below the frost line. Everything is just built to the hilt there, and we've got dip bars, and we've got the setup to lift the Hoosa steel stone,
right,
at all various heights. And then we did another set with these big thick cables, because one of the things I found when you go to lift that Hoosa fell stone, sometimes it likes to rock a little bit forward on you, and it puts a tremendous amount of tension where the pec insertion is into the shoulder,
right.
So we set up a thing there where you can literally lay on your back, dead stop the dumbbells right through these cables, and if you have to get out of the way, you get out of the way, let them go, and they hang right there, they suspend.
Oh, nice.
So the other set of dip bars is set up the same way, because, you know, man, I'll be out, like, cooking out some night, and I'm like, I think I'll go do some dips. So I walk around the side of the garage, nail maybe 5-10 just body weight dips, walk back, flip the burger, you know, and sit there and just kind of hang out. So, you know, it's always there. I've always been a big fan of dips, but I'll tell you one thing I do love probably at all the pressing stuff. Well, I love the log. There's so many things with logs and all that, but there's nothing like grabbing a 2-inch handle dumbbell and pressing that sucker. And I know your grip is going to dictate that thing, but I've done a couple different things where I've built equipment to take care of that.
Right.
But what do you say as far as dumbbells? But I mean, I know you're a big dumbbell fan. Do you feel that's one of the better movements as far as building, you know, super duper deltoids?
Yeah, I mean, I have two major pressing movements that I go to, and then several other auxiliary movements, and one that's a bodyweight exercise. It actually is a pressing movement, but For me, the major pressing movements I use is a one-arm press of some sort. Now, be that with dumbbell, kettlebell, whatever, I don't care what the thing is, as long as you're doing it with one arm, standing up, pressing overhead. I don't care what it is. It doesn't make a difference to me. I don't think there's a big difference. And I think the thing with that is it's a nuanced thing as to what fits the individual person's shoulder or build better. I grew up, you know, basically doing one-arm dumbbell presses.
Sure.
And did a ton of those, and they always worked great, and I got real strong at them. And then that actually, what's funny is that was one of the events I included several times in some of the strongman contests I put on real early in the very early strongman contests in America. Mm-hmm. And then nobody else did it. It was kind of out of favor. And then later on, the circus dumbbell thing came back. Now it's big there or whatever. Although I will say they use a little different form. The dumbbell itself used in a circus dumbbell allows for more of a jerk type motion because of the way, if you look at the way that's done, the dumbbell is tilted very high. Mm-hmm. It allows the dumbbell to sit into the shoulder. So you're really using the body to drive and then locking out with the arm and shoulder versus a real shoulder drive off the bottom. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's still shoulder drive. It doesn't make a difference.
Sure.
But it's not the same thing. I have gotten real heavy into, I do most of my one arm pressing this period in my life with the kettlebell. And really that's actually because I had an injury.
Okay.
I was at a grappling place and grappled a guy who was a professional MMA guy. And we got in a pretty rowdy little match. And I caught him in a body lock and he rolled. And the guy's like a tornado, man. He rolled like, just went like, it looked like somebody, like a shark on a death roll or a roll or something. You know, like one of them crocodiles that does that.
Yep, does the flip in the water.
Yeah. And anyway, when he rolled, I had locked hold on him. When he did, he rolled me and him both over the top of one of my shoulders.
Oh.
And it slightly tore my bicep and shoulder at the insertion at the top. Yep. And actually, it actually pulled the tendon out of socket. There's a process in your shoulder that tendon sits across. It pulled it out of socket. It pulled it off where it was supposed to be. And I got it messing around a day or two later. I got it to pop back into place and it got better. But I can do it now. But I just got into, I started doing presses at that time because for a long time I couldn't put my shoulder back into the position to do a one arm dumbbell press. The real, elbow rotated out to the side position that you're in. Well, I mean, you can do it with an elbow to the front position a little bit more closely or whatever, but I got into pressing really big kettlebells. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Kettlebell, dumbbell, I don't care what you press. I just like
weight is weight.
Yeah, weight is weight. And I'll tell you one of the craziest ones I ever did that will pump you up like insane is I used to do these one-arm presses, and I've actually – these are what I travel with sometimes. Is the cable sets, the old Lifeline cable sets, the new ones, but you know what they are, the old chest expander sets.
I got them, yep.
You got them? Well, you know, the European guys had these, the giant spring ones that, they were the old, most of the stuff you saw in the American, sports stores forever was like four or five springs, and it wasn't very
Yeah, they were cheesy as hell.
And it would shit crap out of you. It never felt like it was doing anything, but if you ever look at the European guys, they had them modified and set up so you could put up to like 20 springs on them. Yep. They had these heavy springs or whatever, and they could make it as crazy strong as possible, and they would do a version of a one-arm press with those. And I set up to do that with Lifeline's cable sets this a couple of years ago, and that is just excruciatingly powerful pump and a shoulder power builder. Again, I like the one-arm press version of it. Same thing. Doesn't matter if it's a cable. Doesn't matter if it's a kettlebell. Doesn't matter if it's a, I actually hit a PR yesterday in one arm presses, totally out of the blue.
Okay.
I pressed I couldn't, it's so awkward, and I actually kind of like this about it, but it's so awkward I couldn't hold the lockout very well, but I did press it to lockout. I got a 150-pound kettlebell stacked. I stacked a 53-pound kettlebell on top of it.
Oh, I saw that. Your son helped you with the other one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The handle on my 150 is a really, it's almost 2 inches thick. It's super thick.
Yeah.
And then so I couldn't actually clean and put them both in the position, holding both handles at the same time. It was just too – it had my hand literally almost all the way open. And so he actually just helped me stack it there on there or whatever. But
how the hell did that feel, man?
Oh, it's awesome. It's all it's awkward. That double handle thing is really awkward, but it's
–
the press itself – is an amazing exercise, and I like it because it has a lot of cross-applicable athletic stuff as well.
Sure it does.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you ask me, the one-arm press is as athletic or more athletically applicable than a two-arm press.
Mm-hmm.
Because
definitely,
you almost never are you gonna, a two-arm press is almost always done in a balanced manner, and you're never going to be balanced in an athletic situation. You're never going to be, you know, where you're both
standing straight up,
or that kind of. It's not going to work that way. But again, that's preference. There's because one of my next actual weight exercise that I would do for shoulders would be a seated press in the rack or a standing press. You know, often I like doing presses out of the rack just because I like the overload you can get from there from doing them from a dead stop. But
oh yeah,
you know, stand.
I do.
Seated press,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Barbell stuff. Either one of those is phenomenal shoulder developer.
Well, I've got a couple things I think you'd be interested in. I've got a Viking press that sits right in the power rack.
Yep.
I've put a few of them out on on YouTube. That thing is absolutely brutal, no matter what height I lock that in through the rods. That thing's killer. But one of the things that I designed and we built was we basically built, you know, it's the width of the power rack, and obviously the rods in the rack are 1 inch, so we made the cylinders that this thing sits on. It allows you to slide the rods through these cylinders, put it all the way through, lock it in the rack with the pins, so you've got something that is literally sitting within the rods. So I can take this device and put it at any height, and it's wide enough so I can put my hand and wrist through it, slap a big, huge dumbbell on it, and press it. And this thing is the soup and nuts, man. I love this thing. I did it the other night. With it, and I usually mainly use a 2-inch dumbbell on it. I just like the idea of I love grip work. I do tons of it. I'm doing a lot of bending now and stuff. But I find that why not kill two birds with one stone?
Right.
Because you got the security when you press this thing, even if you missed it and it came down, it's going to catch it.
Right.
But I like the feeling, Bud, of being able to like work your fingers and your hands all into this thing and moving your wrists and pulling this dumbbell kind of back and forth before you do it. That's one thing. And a thing I've been experimenting with a lot, I don't know if I told you this, and I've been doing it with almost everything lately. And I had to get used to it a little bit at first because I would start this one out first, go to another and another. And what I'm doing is I'm a big proponent of Heist shrugs. I love J.C. Heist. I love the whole story of him. To me, he was a true strongman that worked his ass off, too, you know, like a Bob Peoples style guy.
Yep.
And what I've been doing is I go from Heist shrugs, and usually I'll keep those low reps. That could be anywhere from fours to a single.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go right over. I have the original Nautilus four-way neck machine.
Right.
I go from there, I do all four sides, same rep scheme, and then I go out and do the hand-thigh deadlift with my 55-gallon barrels for singles.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, man, my traps and neck, I'll bet you in the last 6 to 8 weeks have grown over an inch.
Wow.
And that ain't no bull. You want to try something that will explode your body. And I'm just – I've gotten to be like a maniac with the neck now. You know, I've always been a big neck guy, forearm guy, and calf guy. I think those are things that we don't really talk about a lot, and they're kind of neglected. And all three of those things are very pertinent to everything. I mean, let's face it, neck, getting an auto accident, you get in a fight, very important, you know.
Yep.
Someone ain't going to choke you out when you got a strong neck, unless they're some ungodly professional. Same way with your hands, your forearms, your wrists. Make or break you right there with a lift. Calves, I never hear anybody talk about calf work. It's like it is so essential.
Yeah.
Same way with ankle work. So I've been doing this experiment, and I'm going to keep doing it because I think it's going to pay bigger and bigger dividends as I get more and more involved with this with other lifts.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's one of those things of not neglecting the small things.
No.
Makes a big difference. I think that kind of brings an interesting point into the development of shoulders is the upper back in relation to shoulders, and how does that play in, you know, how does that, and I think one of the major things you see in shoulder development that people do wrong is they don't do enough upper back work to fill in the rear shoulders. And I think that's where you see a lot of people with injuries, and you see a lot of people just don't have that really powerful look because their traps and rear shoulders aren't as developed as they need to be.
Exactly. You know? And that's one of the reasons why I like that Heist shrug so much.
Right.
You know, I mean, and it's really a two bang for one, because you and I both know who doesn't like to hold something big on their shoulders. Yeah. I mean, that all goes now to the dead stop squat with guys like you and I. What I try to do with anything I do is I try to, you know, you and I both know we're a full unit. We don't, even when I curl with an Apollon axle or anything, I try to throw everything in with it, whether I'm using the upper back or what. And I'm not talking about being sloppy and making the lift look like a joke, but I try to activate and incorporate everything I can.
Right.
And it's the same way I think with Heist, because you and I both know nothing feels better than holding something very heavy on top of your body. And I think what I do is, you know, I get a little bit indirect stuff. So when I go in the hole and want to come out with X number of pounds, you know, I know I've had the weight on me, say, in the last 2 weeks. And it gives me a hell of a lot of confidence to go out and attempt something bigger than I might normally do.
Right. Right.
So,
I totally agree.
No, go ahead.
That's another brings an interesting point. Another one of my favorites for shoulders is kind of similar to what you're talking about there. I love to do these. They are brutal, but they're phenomenal. I'll do them both seated or standing, and I'll do overhead holds in a power rack. Okay.
Yep.
So I do them a couple different ways. And obviously, if you're seated, then you're not going to employ your legs really. But
correct.
I do them seated, or I also do them standing. And what I'll do is one of two things. I'll either set the bar so it's only 2 or 3 inches from lockout at the very top.
Yep.
Press it up. And what I like to do generally with that is I'll keep my body locked in a solid position, and I'll press as long as I can, up till I absolutely cannot move the bar with my arms and shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll lock my arms and shoulders and dip down, add some more weight, lock my arms and shoulders, dip down, use my body, my legs and back to lift the weight, and just hold it overhead.
Yeah, definitely.
I got up doing some massive poundages with that a couple years ago, and also doing them as isometrics. So I would do some where I hold it there, or I would do some where I would set the bar where I would be 3 or 4 inches short of lockout, but there would be a second pin literally just prior, like an inch or less from really being totally locked out. And I would press the bar up into that and hold it as long as I could, doing both long and short holds. And let me tell you something. You want to figure out how crazy tough that can be?
Oh, yeah. I know.
I mean, it made me stupid strong that way. I mean, just ridiculous strong that way. But then it transferred directly into my ability to do other stuff. And that's what, you know, made the full range pressing a lot lighter. I think it makes my shoulders and everything a lot more durable.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, man. You want to talk about whole body activation? I can vividly remember doing this set. Now, I would do heavy short holds, but that would also be lighter long holds, because I found that the muscular development from them was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So like one day I took like 315 and did a standing press lockout as an isometric. So I'm 3 or 4 inches from lockout. I press it up, press it into a second set of pins, and I hold it pressing with the weight in my hands, body straight up and down as far and long as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I held it for like a minute at the press there, and by the end I was literally shaking all the way down to my toes, literally my like, you know how you that muscular shake will come over you, like you normally feel it in just like, you know, the muscle that you're pressing with. I had gotten it literally all the way down into my feet.
That's awesome though. You know, go ahead.
Psychotically brutal, but the ability, but I immediately made press gains as well as size gains in the shoulders from doing that.
Oh, that, I'll tell you, you know, that reminds me of, like, I read Grimmick was a big guy with that. And I believe that he did a lockout close to 1,000 pounds, if I remember the story. And he used to push that stuff big time. But I'll tell you something I do like that, too. I mean, I do the same things like you do with the press. But But what I started doing with them, and I thought this was real interesting because I use bungee cords. But I'm talking very heavy-duty ones, but not the rubber ones. They'd be the type that, geez, I don't know what you would call them. They're not cloth, but they're like that style, all right? But these things are brutally strong. So I'll wrap them in the power rack, obviously, loop them around, you know, the 4x4, or the, not the 4x4, but the post, you know, each one of them.
Right.
And what I'll do is I'll set the barbell on the pins, and I'll set it like at chin height or the top of the nose, okay, the bridge of your nose right at the top. So I'm going to have to dip down a little bit because I'm not ready now to start loading the big partials up yet. So I'll start with a medium weight, and I'll take this thing, and what I'll try to do is push right through the bungee cords. So what you do, it's not going to be something that's literally going to stop you dead in the track like hitting the other rod,
okay,
but what it does to you, it teaches you how to drive a bar.
Okay.
And I'll tell you right now, I got phenomenal results with that, doing that. And I've done those at all different heights too, but it's just like with the dead stop squats or the deadlifts or anything. I love to have that second set of rods set up. And even if you pull it, like you said, an inch and you hold that thing till, you know, your teeth feel like they're going to fall out of your head and then you put it back down. Absolutely. And you will get shoulder development like nothing else. There's no doubt about that. You know, anything with an isometric, let's face it, if you know how to execute it properly and you know how to push or pull through it, and you take your time with it, you will get phenomenal strength gains, musculature, and obviously, like you said, it will transfer over.
Yeah. Oh, and I think that's why, like, I've been able to that's something we, you know, at the very beginning of the show, we talked about being able to do things. I've been able to have a pretty rowdy streak of physical gains at an age,
yep,
when people say I shouldn't. And I actually think that's one of the key secrets is the isometric work that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has allowed me to build up an excess of strength so that I can then transfer it to unique activities that, like, I shouldn't be able to do. Like, I got really, really heavily into one-arm push-ups and one-arm, elaborate, difficult push-ups. One-arm Hindu push-ups, one-arm, one-leg Hindu push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing that a guy at my body weight shouldn't be able to do.
Exactly, exactly.
But my ability to support strength in different positions is very high from that isometric type work.
Well, look at what you said that time a few shows back about Noah.
Yeah.
And that doctor said, you know, looking him over bodily, he should not be able to do those things. And looking at tendon and ligament strength, there's no doubt about it, bud. But you know why it's not popular? Because it's too damn hard, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it is.
It's too friggin' hard. Here's the deal. I could come to 10 people and say, look, I've got a secret program here that could make you better than anybody out there. You would look almost like an Iron Man, literally, all right? You'd be so strong, you could do it. And then I would come up to them and say, you know what? I've got this really nice pumping routine here, and you can be like all the stars within the next 30 days. Guess what, man? I lost the Iron Man. they're all going with the 30-day program. So, you know, you understand here that what you're doing, you know, with an isometric and what it does for it. And not only that, it's just the idea it builds the mental capacity. And I think, you know, as we're talking about your book with, you know, the 40 crowd, I think, yeah, we're all told you can't do it. But I think at a certain point, and I don't care if you're a weight trainer or not, you've got to have guys and gals you've known through the years that suddenly they seem to collapse mentally.
Yep.
And I think it all goes back to, you know, maybe you were doing it. Maybe you were successful to a point. Maybe you were just lucky. I mean, there's a lot of people that can do things successfully for a few years. And I've got a good friend like that. He's dropped out of sight.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they get into the injury dilemma, and suddenly they can't do it anymore. Even if they can do it physically, they're defeated totally mentally.
Yeah. Well, I think people get there. I think that the other thing about that is I think you can do the opposite. You can begin, mm-hmm, to believe more and more that you are more capable, And I think a lot of that has to do with building a track record of winning in everything that you do. Now, and I don't mean that, you know, win at all costs or that everything is going to be that way all the time. And it's not going to be that way. But if you don't keep that attitude that I am going to succeed at it, you're just not going to – it's not going to get there. Now, I will say one thing about that. Priorities change. You know what I'm saying? Different people – I mean, just life changes, priorities change. And I'm kind of through trying to preach a crowd into my way.
Right.
I kind of feel like if you're ready to hear it, you're ready to hear it, and that's the deal. You know what I'm saying? Or if you're a person who, you know, like I will literally tell you that life can be absolutely anything you can make it. Mm-hmm. And you could be, and I believe anybody could become basically whatever. However, truth is not everybody wants to be a strong man. Not everybody
Correct.
Wants to, you know, you and to you and I, it's a little bit inconceivable. Why wouldn't you want to have massively broad shoulders?
No, you're right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I could go live in a cave if you gave me some stuff and I had some rocks. I could live like that the rest of it. I could live that barbaric. I'm not bullshitting you when I say that. I'm looking more and more now for more rustic, for more let me think of the word if it'll come to me. I can't think of the word, and it's a good one too. We'll go on, but I like at this stage of training for me and what I want to do in the next, say, 22 months. I want to build more toughness even in me. I want more laborious things. I want to play even harder. Let me put it to you that way. Like I spoke to, Andrew Carney yesterday from Scotland, who's a strong man. And we had a great show yesterday, and he's lifted every stone in Scotland, which I want to get over there after Iceland and I at least get the Inver. Okay.
Yeah.
And he did, like, you know, the Dinnies, Fiona, all the big stones in ice in Scotland.
Right.
And what I'm finding now at this stage in lifting with me is I'm not backtracking at all. In fact, I'm kind of going further. I mean, I look at a lot of friends of mine. They're still training. They're very strong people, but they're not. They don't want to try anything new, and they don't. How do I put it, man? It's like they don't. I think they're losing their drive, man.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Where me, like I think I told you before, we've had shows where, you know, everybody's like, well, you know, I'd like to do some body weight stuff and this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, are you out of your mind, man? I said, I'm going to start bending, breaking. And I said, the thing with me is always going to be, I'm going to have a very hard time shifting gears, and I'm going to have to at some point. I know that.
You know what, though?
But
I don't think body weight is a depending on how you do it.
Yeah,
Like a lot of people classify that as a less brutal thing.
I know that.
Not if you do it the right, because a lot of the guys look at that as a, you know, and here most of the body weight crowd is going to sell it that way. You know, it's way easier on your body, it's way easier on your joints. You know, maybe depending on what you're doing, but there's a lot of gymnasts who do primarily body weight exercise who are pretty wrecked. That doesn't,
sure.
You know, a lot of it is the difficulty you put in it. Because I'll give you for instance of that. I have seen no human on the planet, no matter whether they're a 112-pound gymnast or not, pull off a power variation one-arm handstand push-up.
Wow.
I haven't been able to find anybody. I've seen one guy who I think is pretty close. But I've seen people do it from a gymnast's style, okay, which is a body-heaving movement. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about one that's done a pure power-pressing in a one-arm handstand position.
Right.
Nobody's done it. No human being that maybe somebody has, and I don't know. I haven't seen it. And I've looked. Okay? I think there are a million frontiers to explore that can all be just as crazy and hardcore as, you know, as possible. And I kind of think, you know, in the shoulder thing, like we were talking about, it really don't matter. If you press a barbell, if you press a thick barbell, if you press a log or a sandbag or a keg or a dumbbell or a dumbbells or kettlebell, it doesn't matter. I do think you've got to press hard.
Yes.
And I think for the biggest shoulders, I'll tell you some stuff I think we kind of mistakenly do there. Because we talked all about heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's two things that we've missed here. Okay?
Sure.
Is number one is I think shoulders are one of the primary things you can train by doing things ultra strict.
Yep.
And then also with a heaving, it's not cheating, but with a heaving motion. So mm-hmm. that would equate to a truly strict press,
mm-hmm.
a dead stop press in the rack, or mm-hmm. arm presses or whatever, and then a push press.
Correct.
I think those are, and I think that transfers even more into two of my other primary shoulder developers, which is, you know, a lot of the hardcore guys want to bag on this, but I'm telling you, I got some monster shoulder development out of it, is a lateral raise with a dumbbell. So
I agree. Definitely, yeah.
That you're,
yep.
you know, that you mentioned earlier. That was one of his things, too.
Yep.
And I think that's another primary movement, that and the upright row, that
yep.
yeah, can be done both of those ways, a totally strict variation of both and a heaving or body effort, you know, a body heaving variation mm-hmm. of those are both incredibly powerful for development. And I'll tell you the other thing I think we haven't hit yet. We haven't skipped it. We haven't hit yet.
Okay.
Talked all about super heavy lifting.
Yeah.
But and you know, we love to, you know, everybody from the hardcore, you know, this kind of got started with dinosaur training, although it was going on before then.
Sure.
Like to bag on the bodybuilders, man. They like to, you know.
Yeah.
However, I'll tell you something they got right is some of those guys do some seriously high rep shoulder stuff.
Yep.
And that is just as brutal. Just
well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Just as crazy. I mean, it really, really is just as hard. You know what? A max one-arm press or a max heavy press
yep.
is super brutal. So is a maximum set of 20 reps.
Yep.
I mean,
I used to do, and that you were talking about Lifeline, how they've kind of changed. I don't know if you've got them. I've got the old set where you can put your feet on through like stirrups, they almost are.
Yeah. The,
and you can do, you know, you can do your squats like that and all. But what I like to do with them is I like to do the one-arm shoulder press. So I'll put my one foot through there, and away I go. And I'll tell you what, I've gotten some of the best shoulder pump and workout that I've ever done with that.
Yep.
You know.
Absolutely. I think from a true development standpoint, cables
yeah.
are absolutely awesome. A lot of the old-time guys use a lot of cables. Dennis Rogers uses them. The Mighty Adams
sure.
use them a lot. And I think they have a real applicable physical strength. And people bag on that. But
yep.
there is almost nothing that pumps you, like
mm-hmm.
almost nothing. I mean, it's like it's phenomenal. You literally like a skin splitting kind of a thing almost, you know.
Well, without a doubt. And just to let you know, speaking of the Mighty Adam, we're working on this right now. We might have his son coming on the show.
Get Mike to come on. Nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. So we're waiting to hear some people put out some feelers, and I don't want to digress from this, but that's definitely noteworthy to say, for sure.
Oh, that'd be awesome to get Mike on that and talk about a lineage of strength as well as, you know, 93 years old and still
oh yeah,
still doing it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Bud, that's the thing. I want to get more and more of these guys that are still around, and, you know, maybe we end up having a round table like we've been doing here every once in a while and getting this stuff out here, because it's really important, because when these guys are gone, you know, we kind of lose all that stuff. I mean, it's nice to read about it, but when you hear it verbatim out of somebody's mouth that was there,
yeah.
that's when it really registers with you.
Well, and it's funny how, like, sometimes those stories are pretty, you know, they're pretty accurate, and sometimes
yep.
when you listen to the real old-time guys talk about it, it's actually a little different than
yeah.
you.
Yeah. you know what we haven't hit upon either? We were talking about circus dumbbells. What about Thomas Inch? I've got one sitting on the floor I've brought to my shoulder, but I've just done too much where I haven't even got into that. That's something I got to really focus on.
Right.
Have you had much experience with an inch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I
have. Okay. Now, I haven't one-handed cleaned it, but I one-arm pressed it.
Right. Okay.
It's a brutal thing, and that's something that you really kind of take into account. There's something for people to learn there as an individuality thing, but it's also, I think, something that they don't know about the old time dumbbells. Okay.
No.
The handle on an, I don't find anything up to about 2 inches to be much of a
challenge.
Big obstacle on
right.
pressing. But once you get over 2 inches, and maybe it's just the size of my hand or maybe whatever, it really does make a difference in your ability to press because your hand is so open.
Absolutely.
In the press, and that makes a big difference in that. The inch dumbbell is actually quite a beast to press.
Yeah.
Because the handle is short and the globes rotate in an odd way, and it makes the bell want to tilt. So that particular one, it makes it want to come out of your hand as well. You have to really actually have a pretty strong hand to stabilize it while you press it.
Yeah, your wrist better be damn strong, because I'll tell you, that thing could break your wrist if you don't look out with that, you know?
And
I mean,
those guys had, it wasn't just Inch. Inch wasn't the only guy who had, a lot of those guys had challenge bells or challenge stuff, different ones that they used at different times. And there's a lot of stuff about Inch about whether he actually pressed it or not.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There's a big, I don't know what big, big for our world.
Yeah.
Big controversy. A lot of people don't think that Inch ever actually one-arm clean and pressed the set.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I never heard that one before. Wow.
They're in Inch's collection of dumbbells was lighter ones.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
And that dumbbell, I bet you don't know this either. The real Inch dumbbell, I touched it.
You did?
Yeah.
Where is the real Inch dumbbell located?
That's
then?
In a private collection. That's in Kim Wood's collection.
Oh, okay. He's got it. Okay. Wow.
And
wow.
That's it. Yeah, it's in a private collection, and I was fortunate enough to visit and be able to touch it. And I'll tell you what's weird about it. This is a strange thing, and there's a lot of theory behind this too. The actual Inch dumbbell has a hole in the handle.
No.
It's not loadable. It's a solid cast bell.
Okay.
The actual handle itself has what appears to be almost like a drilled hole that's about a quarter of an inch or so wide, and I don't know how deep, maybe a half inch or an inch deep or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Theory is, I don't know how true this is, theory is that Inch had a ring or a glove often when he would lift it, and it had a stud in it, and that to stop the bell from rotating out of your hand.
Gotcha. Okay.
He was.
Dude, you're shooting my love for Thomas Inch now.
Well, here's the thing
man.
About that, okay? Here's the thing about that. That's conjecture.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the truth.
Yeah.
The consensus amongst a lot of guys is that Inch maybe didn't actually do it, the actual lift. But that doesn't mean Inch wasn't strong.
Oh, absolutely.
And there was quite a bit of that in different pieces of that era where, different guys had some things that were a little bit of sleight of hand. Because at the time Inch was touring and popular and doing those things, it was a big thing to have a public challenge.
Sure.
And you had to be able to do something. I forget who had the bell. I forget who it was. One of the guys had a bell that they had the inside of the handle was hollow, and it was filled with mercury.
Oh, wow.
And so it was essentially like a giant heavy barbell or dumbbell with a slosh pipe handle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't know exactly how to lift, Saxon challenged this guy. I don't remember the guy's name, but Saxon challenged this guy, and he couldn't stabilize the press with the bell, even though he was actually way stronger than this guy.
Right.
But it was all because there was a special technique to lifting it because it had slosh in the handle.
Yep.
And it was just a different kind of a different animal. And that whole
thing. And we all know most of that stuff was done in the back room of pubs.
Oh, yeah. A lot of that was done way or done in a circus or.
Absolutely. And there's something very unique about that. Those are errors. I mean, I wish I could step into one of them and just be part of that for a little while. That was, I love all that stuff. Any type of challenge with a dumbbell or any of that. I mean, that to me really shows real. Rubber to the road strength. I mean, because to use anything with one arm, you've got to be very developed to move anything like that,
Well, and it is, what's funny about that is you actually can move per limb, you can actually move more with one arm because you can get the whole body behind it once you master the technique. And really there is technique to those lifts. However, it's not, like a high level Olympic lift technique where it's like super super dialed in, has to be super exact, that kind of thing. It's technique anybody can learn, anybody can master.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, speaking of Olympic lifting, the worst thing they ever did was taking the press out. I love watching the old stuff, and you see those guys, man. To me, when you can put a monster object over your head, I mean, that's where it's at. I mean, you know, like when I was talking to Andrew yesterday when he went and did the Inver, mm-hmm. you know, he pressed that stone three times over his head, which is phenomenal,
nice.
Man.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm a big fan of stones, whether you carry or you press them. I still think that's what harks back to the old world. And the strength was obviously different. Are there stronger guys today? Well, maybe respectively different, but I still like the way the older guys, you know, manage the big tools overhead and, you know, the large objects to carry.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why today. I hate to mention the drug thing, but I think you have to really bring that in when you start talking about comparison of modern. I don't think on a unit per unit of muscle,
yeah.
anybody is a lot stronger today, but people are so much bigger.
Yeah.
And the strong men today are so much. I mean, it's, you know, when you're talking about a reasonably muscular guy who's over 400 pounds.
Yeah.
Yep. It's very difficult for anybody of a normal, anyway, and not that, you know, any size of normal human to compete with.
Well, you're watching them, a lot of them drop dead too. And I mean, you can attribute that to a lot of things. And you wonder at this point, how many of these guys that we're watching right now, you know, Zavikas, Brian Shaw, any of these guys, and maybe it doesn't matter to people, but 10 years from now, are you going to be even around? I mean, I don't know. And, you know, I'm one of those people that say live for today. You know, you go out and do the best you can, and you like whatever you're into. But you're starting to see more and more of this stuff. And I think who doesn't want to be big and strong and muscular? There's none of us that are listening to the show that's shaking their head no. But there might come a time and place where, you know, a 450-pound behemoth, you know, you might start seeing them dropping dead in these meets, you know?
Well, that's definitely why, you know, I mean, I'm not bagging on any of them, because actually some of these guys are pretty phenomenal athletes, and some of them are on a per inch of height basis. They're so, you know, like Shaw and Robert Oberst and
Thor there from Iceland.
We're all 6'8", 6'9". I mean, so 400 pounds is something you can carry when you're 7 foot tall. But,
yep.
Again, you know, I mean, these guys do some it's all what you want to do and some amazing stuff that they do. But I don't know, man. I've been that bit, you know, not quite that
yep.
big, but I've been close.
Yep.
And the health toll is a big problem over the long period of time. And you just don't – stuff like that just ain't working, man. Just not, you know.
No, and you know, the thing is, eventually you're going to be doing other things. And, you know, I've said this to you before. I'd like to be around like John Grimmick was in his 80s and still be able to squat some numbers, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what matters in the end, because people are pretty quick to forget the guy that won WSM last year or 2 years ago. They're kind of just looking, okay, who won today? And why be a statistic for it? I mean, I think it's good to go out and do it, claim victory and all that, but then, you know, I it's just coming from me. I'm just looking down the road what I want to do and how I want to stay real viable. And you know what? At this point, you know, a few years from now, so what if I weigh 250 or I go down to 220? My big thing is this, maybe 200. I just want to be cabled like a son of a gun, be able to still train at the highest end I can. And basically, if I can still do it, you know, can you imagine you're 200 pounds, you're ripping off dead stop squats at the bottom and you're moving still very respectable weight. Same thing with the lockout on top. Same thing with a deadlift. Same thing with the stones, farmer's walks, whatever. Can you imagine what kind of body you'd have, man? You could be 60 years old and probably you'd look, even if you're good facially still, you could look like a 45-year-old man.
Oh, absolutely. You absolutely can. I have a couple friends that are pulling that off right now. I mean, my friend Peter Ragnar is, you know,
yep.
God knows how old. I think he's actually sat behind Jesus in kindergarten. That's the story.
Yeah.
And he looks like he actually looks younger than he used to look. And I mean, like, you literally would never know that this guy is like, he looks like 40 years younger than he actually is.
Yeah.
Or more. And he's ripped. And, you know, and he's not, you know, okay, but again, where's the point of being absolutely ridiculously super huge? And I'm somebody who's pursued being super huge and have backed away from it to a slightly more reasonable huge, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what, Bud, think about this, all right? As Dr. Ken used to always say, you know, you're out in the street and you're walking strong. Now, you know, let's face it, the average Joe might be strong as in what's walking around, but a real weightlifter, and I'm talking a guy or a gal that's really lived the physical culture life and is very strong. I mean, unless these people are some type of super fighter or professional fighter, I mean, they're no match for anybody that's been doing that stuff for decades. And I just think, you know, at any, you know, that's the beauty of what we do. And I've said this before, how many sports can you go into where you can pretty much change everything? And you can change it at any age, at any decade you want. I think that's fabulous, too. All right, you weigh 300 pounds today and you can move a house. But you know what? 10 years from now, I'm down to 250, and I can still come close to that, but I'm healthier and I look even better.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely. I'm agree with that, dude. I'm exactly there and headed even more in that direction.
So you want to come? Eventually, you're going to come down a little more.
Oh yeah. I don't really focus so much on the number. I just want to get to a better level of leanness.
Okay.
And I want I want to find it in the way that's something I can live with to get there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because
that reasonable. I'm headed that direction in one way or the other, and I don't mean that as if I'm backing off on physical training. I'm just modifying my direction.
And you know something too is
that, especially as you get a little older or you get some, you know, muscle maturity or that memory comes on, I'm pretty convinced that you can produce the same amount of force with a smaller body.
In most
stuff, you know.
Yeah, and let's face it, too. You know, there's nothing wrong with your aesthetics and looking better, too. I mean, you know, people say, oh, you're vain and all this bullshit. It's like, you tell me anybody you know, I mean, unless they're totally out there, doesn't want to look nice. I mean, you know, you don't want to go out with a woman that's in poor shape. I mean, you know, if you're attracted to somebody, I know looks are, you know, well, what is it all about looks? Well, I'm telling you from my end, the first thing that catches me is going to be how a girl looks. I mean, I'm not going to look at some girl that is all disheveled and a friggin' mess, right? I mean, I'm going to obviously look at the prettiest girl wherever I am. So, you know, having the ability to change your body and create maybe a better sense of health, well, you know, mentally and physically, and yet, you know, you could still push a prowler 10 blocks down the friggin' street, you know, loaded. I think that's a great thing, man.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think it's a wonderful idea. That really kind of returns to two points there, the old-time strongman and the physical culture idea, the broadest definitions of strength, of health, and endurance. And truth is, most of us sacrifice some health.
Well, absolutely. Definitely.
We were talking about the competitive guys, and I got nothing against them because I've done some insane stuff competitive-wise and that kind of thing. But I'll tell you where I ended up settling. I ended up understanding that whatever it is you do, you'd better be doing because you want it, not because you think it's going to be a paycheck, not because you think it's going to be because there's going to be some roaring crowd of people in front of you, because the athletic prowess, no matter how awesome it is nothing that is going to rock the world.
Definitely.
You know, if it doesn't make you happy to do, then sacrificing 10 years of your life to go compete because you think it's going to get you glory from something is ridiculous.
Yeah, you're going to be highly disappointed. And like I said before,
that kind of listening to your voice versus listening to the crowd.
Well, once again, we hit that same theme because I was saying all the outside influences, how we're constantly, we got to make ourselves better. We got to do this. We got to do that instead of listening to the tools you have. I mean, God gave you some good tools, and it's unfortunate that a lot of us are not smart enough to listen, and we feel we need all outside influences to make us what we want to be, when it's the insides that make the outsides, you know, and that's what I believe.
Absolutely. Say yeah. Something that's helpful here with people
ahead.
Too as well, something we didn't get to, but okay. Is things that make the shoulders healthier, since we are talking about did go to a, you know, let's talk about longevity and being safe,
sure.
Smart, and being healthy. Things that I'll tell you, I had three things that I think really helped the three, maybe four things that really, I think, helped the health of shoulders.
Okay.
Number one is a windmill done with a barbell or kettlebell, something like that.
Yep.
I think that really does help the shoulder stability. Number two is the cable, especially overhead and rear or standing front, what they call standing front chest pull done with a
yep.
chest expander.
Yep.
I think those really radically help the health of your shoulders. I also think different variations of push-ups, getting some different mm-hmm. I like to do push-ups with a lot of different angles, and I really think that does help moving into getting stability from a lot of different angles. I think Hindu push-ups are really a great shoulder health builder as well.
I agree. Yep.
And then obviously the rack stuff I think is a big on building a shoulder that can move and be healthy and be supple and not but at the same time be supported by a joint that's iron strong, that's
yeah.
The ligaments and tendons are very developed. I think all of those are big on if you're gonna build big shoulders, you don't want
yep.
big shoulders that are constantly in pain or inflexible. And
no good.
Yeah, I'll tell you something else that helps with shoulder inflexibility is swinging a mace or a club.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is big on and actually building flexible shoulders as well. So you might.
Go ahead.
You might as well have it all. You might as well have shoulders that don't hurt along with being big and
well, let's face it, bud. When you walk into a place, people are going to know that you're a weightlifter. But I think as far as look-wise, and I'm not talking with a girl taper either at the waist, but when you see somebody come in with an upper back that's developed like hell, traps, and you got a pair of shoulders that look like they could stretch a mile, I just think that's very impressive. And it shows a sense of power, and I like that. I mean, I think it's a – you know, never be embarrassed to show that you have strength and size. You've worked damn hard for it, most of these people, and it's like you don't have to go out and brag to people. I mean, if you're very confident in what you do and you come into any situation, you know, you meet new people, you walk into a bar, whatever you do, people usually, no matter whether they like it or not, they will show you respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important, you know, have pride in what you do. If you want to build big, huge cannonball shoulders, by God, do it, man. But I think from an aesthetic thing, when I see somebody with a pair of big-ass shoulders, I'm saying to myself, well, here's the real deal probably coming in here. And I have a total, without even meeting the person, I have a total respect for them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you something that has struck me about that is I've talked a lot recently in some of my thoughts and the things I've discussed with people
yep.
about
yep.
being a man in our modern society and all that stuff or whatever. And,
yep.
and
yep.
I'll tell you something that I think is a big help to that. And this is going to sound funny, but I think men's responsibility is to be protectors.
Mm-hmm. People, I agree.
And to be actually functionally able to protect people when you actually have to. But mm-hmm. looking like you could rip a house off its foundation will go a long way
mm-hmm.
toward people not deciding to pick you as a victim
mm-hmm.
or pick any with you as a victim.
Yep.
It
yep.
absolutely makes a huge difference of, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, being crazy and doing stupid things. I'm just talking about, you know, it's wonderful to look like a kind of normal human being. It's also wonderful to look like a really powerful human being. And
actually
be powerful behind that, and then also have the mind and the spirit to back it up is a big thing.
I agree, and you know from being a married man, and I know from dating. All right,
mm-hmm.
I don't care what any of these girls say. You know something? They'll say it to you too. I've had them say it. It's nice to be out with somebody I feel that could protect me if something happened.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I know that a lot of girls don't, you know, well, I can take care of myself. Well, how many, I don't care if they weightlift, a strong guy could overpower any girl, all right? Not unless she kicks him in the jimmy and puts him down. But the point of the matter is, I agree with you totally as far as the protector part comes. I don't think that ever goes away. Just like I don't think that, you know, I think women still like you to hold the door for them, too. I think there's a lot to that whole manliness thing, and I don't care if it's out of step. It doesn't matter. I don't care about public opinion. If I want to open a door or I want to, you know, put my arm around my girlfriend because, you know, whatever, so what? So be it, you know? And I think that the whole protector thing and not being a victim is show all your power, man. Show the electricity you got sitting there. Yeah, that's what I think, man. You know, and I'm a big believer in that. Are we set? Are you good?
I think we're good, unless you got anything else you want to talk about with this.
Dude, I could talk for a week, but I mean, my vocal cords are like,
yep.
We'll have you on again in a couple weeks because these are great shows. I love doing them with you. I love exchanging stuff with you. Why don't you give everybody all the information again, bud, and I'll give mine, and then we'll sign off, and I'll talk to you for a minute or two.
All right. This is Bud Jeffries, and listen, you can find us at StrongerMan.com. That's my website. Look for our brand-new book, okay, Maximum Functional Mass. And then also coming very soon will be Crushing Age, How to Live Your Best Life After 40. And then there's a ton more. Anything else you want to learn about strength, we got there. You can always connect with me on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and all the other Pinterest and all the other stuff you should be looking at right now to find
yep.
anybody.
Okay. Well, that's the truth. You got to have the social media. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company. That's www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We just put up a brand new website today. Motivation Muscle is brand new. You're going to have to check that out. We're just doing some tweaks with stuff. That's going to be probably another few days. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. We are on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell. We are on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. You can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. But I want to tell you something that you'll be very interested in, and I'll make it quick. I got a call from a gentleman in Staten Island, which is downstate from me in New York. His name's Alan, and he's in his late 50s. And he found out all about us. I think he was out perusing looking for Brooks Cubic mm-hmm. because he knew everything. I mean, you know, he had all his books right back to the Hard Gainer days. And he left me a message on Sunday, and I listened to it, and I said, holy cow. So I called this guy back. He had trap bar deadlifted 500 at 49 years of age, and shortly after that, he started having some problems, you know, joints. And he's a martial arts guy, and he's a marine biologist. Very interesting guy. And he hadn't lifted weights now for over 6 years. Well, he found Motivation and Muscle, and he named you, Roger LaPointe, Brooks Cubic, Steve Helmicki, and myself. And I'm here to report to you, which I couldn't be happier, the man has started lifting again.
Oh, awesome.
And he's healing up, and he's now getting ready to buy new equipment, and he wanted to thank all of us. And I thank him because I'm going to tell you something. I've had some nice things said to me, in my life. He said some of the nicest things anybody's ever said to me. And he was shocked to think that the guy that's here talking with you right now would even bother wasting his time calling him back. And what I said to him is what I say to everybody is we're all just sitting around in a living room, man. And we're all talking and exchanging ideas. And yes, like he said, you guys are all probably crazy son of a bitches. And maybe we are in a lot of different ways, but we all got one goal is we all want to see all of us succeed. And whatever it is you want to succeed in, you know, we're with you. So I wanted to pass that on to you. I thought that was really nice of him.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Tell him thank
and
you. If you talk to him, tell him thank you. For me,
I will. Well, you know, Bud, I might bring him on a show in January. This guy is off the beam, man. He is so happy he's lifting weights again. I mean, he said the martial arts did it for him, but it's not weightlifting. And I kind of concur with that. And a lot years ago, I talked to you many years ago, and we were talking about body weight stuff. I remember I said, you know, as much as I like that, bud, I'm a weightlifter, period. I think it all has its value. But when it comes down to it, if you said to me, you can do body weight or you can lift stones the rest of your life, I'd be sitting in the rock pile. Let me put it to you that way. So,
go ahead. Absolutely can continue to lift. I have, yep. You know, I can pull multiple examples of friends of mine who are, you know, I can probably name a dozen guys off the top of my head who are well past 40 into their 50s, 60s, and even into 70s, 80s, and beyond, who are still lifting, still strong, still getting strong or stronger, still doing amazing stuff, man.
Yeah, like Steve Giusta, man. I mean, look at him.
Giusta is
56
years old.
Yep.
Dennis Rogers is 58.
Yep.
Steven Santangelo is 62. Slim Farman just turned 80.
Oh, man.
Peter Ragnar is somewhere above that.
He's the human spirit.
Is 50. That's got to be 55 or 6 now, I think. And you know, you're talking about a guy who passed 50, pulled up a full size tractor trailer a mile by himself.
I know.
There's a mutual friend or a mutual guy. You know,
yep.
This guy actually is a great example of what we were talking about before, is Greg Pickett.
Yep, I remember him. I wish I could get a hold of him. I'd like to have him on the show.
Yeah, Greg sent me a message a day or two ago, and he has recently, because of health issues, dropped a significant amount of body weight, and he did exactly what we're talking about, getting, you know, really healthy and lean.
Yep.
And looks amazingly lean and is still rack squatting about 2.5 times body weight.
That's nice, man. That's really good. Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
No, it's just, go ahead.
Yeah, just amazing stuff, man. There is no reason to stop. What there is reason to do is address how your body is responding and then modify so you're not in pain. But you need to do that if you're 20.
Yep.
As well.
Yep.
Whether you're 40 or 50 doesn't make a difference. And that's awesome. We could have a good effect on that guy's life. That's awesome, man.
Well, it is, and it makes me feel good that we're getting this message out, and I just want to keep expanding it and bringing more and more people into the family here, and you know, whatever we can do, we do. I mean, and any way we can help, I know you would, and I would, and anybody associated with this show, everybody's very giving, and they'll all mention it every time they're on. So, for Bud Jeffries, this is Eric Fiorello. We'll be doing a show in a couple more weeks, so I'm sure we're going to have a lot more good things to talk about. So have a great rest of the week. Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.